Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, coming to you for the next half hour with all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Getting near the end of a couple of disappointing football seasons. We'll talk about that. They remember November. That's what Houston Nutt used to say. Ole Miss trying to play its way into bowl eligibility. Mississippi State is not mathematically eliminated from that. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. We'll hit some other topics too. Logan, how are you, man?
Sad day, Parrish. It's just a terrible day because no more baseball until March. You know, for us Major League Baseball fans, it's an incredible World Series. You know, got to see seven games and then some, you know, win the Dexter inning. So, it was a great time, you know, to watch baseball, but now it's over.
Well, it was a great series, though. And, folks, before we get into that, we're going to talk about the series a little bit. Before we do, I want to remind you about some other Daily Journal podcasts to search for. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's coming to you three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And every Wednesday, check out Prep Rally with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. Brad Locke jumps in there with them as well. That's every Wednesday, all things high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. And Logan and I are here for you every Thursday. Let's talk about that World Series first a little bit, Logan. Number one, you know, we get into college football in August, and my attention drifts away from Major League Baseball at that point. I usually try to catch a game or two somewhere during the summer, and this summer that was up in St. Louis, and it was a fun time there. But, you know, we get going with what we do, man, and I don't think about baseball too much, and we fill up the paper with college football. But what a great series, man, and how entertaining it was just to have two traditional teams. I mean, obviously the talk has been about the Cubs and not winning a series since 1908 and all that. But, look, you know, Cleveland's one of those way-back teams, too, and they hadn't won one since the 40s, and they'd had some good teams and had come close, too, and you had – other storylines around Cleveland with some of their great players through the years, and they just hadn't been able to get it done either. And it was just good to see those two teams in the series, and they matched up well, and they were competitive and balanced. And I just thought that was it was much more entertaining to know that that those games were coming to me rather than the Cubs and the Dodgers. You know, no offense to the Dodgers. Vin Scully had already retired, you know. So you wouldn't have had him calling games and seeing the cameras flash to him up in the booth. But I thought the Cubs and the Indians would really put on a nice show, and they did. And like a lot of people, I kind of wrote the Cubs off when they were down 3-1, and they come back and they get it tied at 3-3. And so I was pulling for them last night. I didn't have a real vested interest in either team. But since you watched probably more of it than I did, Logan, I need to run a couple of things by you. First, I want to say, just look at what a two-out walk can do. You know, you go back to, what, the fifth inning last night, and the Cubs should have gotten the strikeout. It was a bad ball strike call. They call it a ball, so the inning extends with a two-out walk. Madden makes the pitching change right away, and Lester comes in, and all of a sudden, you know, there's an error. And then a wild pitch and two runs score. How often do you see a run score from second base on a wild pitch? But, you know, just by extending the inning with that walk, and obviously it should not have been a walk, but, you know, forget that because, blown calls are just part of the game. So the Indians get the walk to extend the inning, and all of a sudden they turn it into two runs without a hit. But my question for you, since I think you watched more of this series than I did, is, why doesn't John Lester field his position?
He hasn't been able to field his position for a long, long time. And you know, sometimes are able to take advantage of that, but at the same time, he's so good at keeping guys off base that, doesn't run into those situations very often. And another thing, Paris, is he didn't like to throw to first. It's not just the fact that he can't field his position. He don't throw over to first at all. So guys get
right.
humongous
so he doesn't manage, over there. Doesn't manage the run game. Yeah.
And I thought, that Madden maybe pulled the trigger a little bit too early. Hendricks was rolling along. I mean, I know he's not one of their more known starters, and they, had other guys ready to go out there in the field. And, last game of the season, you can throw, everybody's available. But I thought the trigger was a little bit, the hook was a little bit too early with him. I thought he was, had good poise out there on the mound. He looked like he was settled in. It didn't look the moment was too big for him. He pitched well. I guess it all worked out. I mean, obviously they went to Chapman, two nights ago, threw a lot of pitches, pitched three games in a row. I think that was the most pitches he'd thrown in, way back to his days in Cincinnati. So, I mean, he threw a lot, and obviously, anytime you got a guy that's throwing that hard with that velocity, I mean, it's going to take its toll on you, especially when you extend those innings and get more pitches up than you want to. And Rajay Davis ran into one, two-run shot, and got Cleveland right back into the game. And, I was pulling for Cleveland in that game. I mean, I don't have a favorite Major League Baseball team. I love baseball. I don't really have a team whatsoever. And normally I would be pulling for a team like the Cubs, who haven't won it in 108 years. But I thought the Cubs went out and spent way too much money. And that's what I'm going to get. I like teams that actually have that team continuity, have a good manager. And I do think Madden's a good manager. But I like the way that Terry Francona manages and what he does and goes about their business. Cleveland didn't have just that huge payroll salary. Kind of flew under the radar for most of the season. Well, not many people expected Cleveland to be there. So I was kind of pulling for them. But, I am happy for all those long-suffering Cubs fans that are out there. And even the bandwagon fans that have kind of came out of the woodworks over the last few weeks, Parrish. I'm sure you've seen it a lot. It seemed like there's a lot more Cubs fans than I've ever seen before. And I don't know where these people were. Over the years, but apparently everybody's been a Cub fan their whole life, and I just don't get into all that. And I know some people are, and I'm happy for those, but some of them just kind of jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, and you do see them this time of year now. Everybody comes out. What I was really what I thought was interesting last night when the Indians were hitting Chapman late, they were hitting good pitches. They were hitting pitches where he wanted to pitch them. They were low. I think that first hit that kind of got the inning started for Cleveland there, I guess it was in the eighth, I thought he left one up high in the zone. But, that home run, Davis just went and got it. He reached down and he muscled it out of there. And that was a good piece of hitting by Cleveland. And to me, it underscored the scouting that goes on.
Yeah, and you don't have to do a whole lot with Chapman. If you can get the bat on the ball, a lot of that velocity he'll give you some extra power in there. And that thing, it was hit on the line and barely got out of the ballpark. But, hey, it was enough, and it put two runs on the board, got Cleveland right back in that thing. It was kind of disappointing, when Cleveland had all that momentum and then they rolled the tarp out there. And, justifiably so. You don't want to – have a game like that decided, have weather factor into the game with all the stakes on the line like that. So I thought the umpires did a good job, but man, it was tough to watch the tarp roll out, with all the momentum that, the Indians had at that point and how exciting the game was. But it kind of gave the Cubs a chance to kind of regroup and get their composure back together. And that's what they talked about after the game was I think Jason Hayward had called a team meeting. And kind of got everybody's heads back focused, and they went back out there and won the ball game.
All right, shifting gears a little bit, Logan, let's talk some college football. Mississippi State at home against Texas A&M Saturday. Ole Miss is at home against Georgia Southern. Both of these are at 11 o'clock, which delights me, and I know that you have mixed feelings about that, very conflicted about that kickoff this week. But let's start with the Bulldogs. Let's go back to the Samford game, Logan. Obviously – you know, it's a win, and you would rather win than lose, and you would rather identify mistakes while you're winning and correct them the next week. But almost, what, 650 yards around that for Samford, and yes, they have an explosive FCS offense, but what's the general feeling around the Mississippi State defense right now? What were they like coming out of that game, and you know, where do you see them getting better in November?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a mixed bag with Mississippi State on Saturday. Mississippi State's offense rolled up 669 yards, scored 56 points, even had two touchdowns taken away. So State's offense was pretty good on Saturday. But as good as their offense was, their defense was almost that bad. Their defense allowed 627 yards, 468 yards through the air. And it's just the situation of State secondary is just god awful. I mean, they're terrible. They're back. They can't cover. They give receivers a huge cushion. And then after the receivers catch the ball wide open, they can't tackle. So, you know, it's just a terrible effort all the way around for State secondary. And that's been their issue all season. And teams that throw the ball, which, you know, Samford is good at it. Texas A&M is certainly good at it. And Arkansas is no slouch. Alabama's going to be good at that. And Ole Miss is obviously very, very well, very, very good at that too. So State's November schedule, it's going to be tough for State to get another win, especially unless their secondary, you know, just amazingly improves one of these weeks. And I just don't see that happening because it's the same problems over and over again. And I know they've had some injuries back there. You know, obviously, Talando Cleveland and Cedric Giles were expected to be the starting cornerbacks to start the year, and both of those guys go down with injuries. Talando Cleveland out for the entire year. Cedric Giles was out until October with a broken arm. He's since returned, but he really hasn't produced a whole lot of results out there. Kevon Coleman, State's senior free safety, has missed the last three games. So, yeah, they really have had a lot of young safeties back there to go along with their young cornerbacks. And it's just kind of been a recipe for disaster. It's all problems in the secondary. And, you know, I really expect Texas A&M this weekend to be able to put up as many points as they'd like to. I mean, it's your – really, you know, when you see an FCS team like Samford, granted they do have a good explosive offense, but at the same time, they're an FCS team, and Mississippi State's an SEC team, and you shouldn't be allowing, I mean, you can see them making a mistake and, you know, a busted play and Samford scores, but Samford was making, you know, scoring look easy. I mean, they were putting up points left and right, chewing up yardage. They had 27 first downs in that game, Parrish. And it's just Mississippi State made, you know, their defense were just kind of cutting through them like it was an FCS defense. And it just Mississippi State didn't put much of an effort. I guess the effort was sort of there, but just really the talent wasn't there. I just don't know what Mississippi State can do at this point in the season to improve their defense. They kind of are what they are. And, yeah, I guess after the season's over, you scrap things and get back to work in the spring, and that's, you know, really what State's down to. I mean, yeah, you're right. Mathematically, Mississippi State can get to a bowl game, but they've got to win three out of their next four. And, you know, Texas A&M, Arkansas, Alabama, and Ole Miss, I just don't see three wins in there.
Well, let's back this up a little bit. Obviously, people were really disappointed to see how an FCS team was able to move and score so easily against State, but that wasn't the case. Or you tell me, the BYU, Kentucky, these other teams, it seems they've been more competitive on defense, or am I missing something? Obviously, the Auburn game was not that way.
Well, it depends on how many times teams want to throw the ball. Whenever teams have decided to throw the ball, Mississippi State hasn't been able to put up much of a defense against that. I mean, they've been able to throw the ball whenever they wanted to. You know, Kentucky, throwing the ball is not their strong suit, but even they, I mean, Kentucky had thrown for less than 100 yards in their previous two games leading up to Mississippi State, and they had a better game pass. I mean, I think they threw for close to 300 yards in your game. So, you know, some of these teams, throwing's not their strong suit, but even they have a decent game against Mississippi State.
I guess Alabama would be the team that liked to run the ball the most out of Mississippi State's next four opponents. But, yeah, I'm expecting Texas A&M this weekend to light up the school board.
Well, you know, we reached this point in the season, Logan, and obviously these seasons have both turned south much more than people in either Starkville or Oxford would have imagined. Now, I know that Mississippi State was picked last in the Western Division, but that's typically not where they finish. Dan Mullen many times has had teams picked low, and he's won a lot of games with those teams. But it just doesn't seem like they've been able to come together.
Yeah, I mean,
this season.
Yeah, right now, I mean, Mississippi State, in all likelihood, should have six wins right now. I mean, they should have been playing, you know, for bowl eligibility against the FCS opponent this past weekend. They've lost three games on the final play of the game and should have won all three of those, obviously. You know, you lose to Samford on a 28-yard field goal that clanks off the left upright. You lose to BYU in double overtime. You lose to Kentucky on a 51-yard field goal after scoring with 1:09 left. And then Kentucky comes down, kicks a 51-yard field goal as time expires. You know, those three games Mississippi State should have won, and that's the difference between a 3-5 team and a 6-2 type of team.
All right, so do you think they continue to play hard and compete this month?
They can, but they're just so outmatched. I mean, they've got a chance against Arkansas. It kind of just depends on which team Arkansas puts up. I mean, obviously, Arkansas beat Ole Miss and then turn around the next week and just got clobbered by Auburn. So, you know, it just depends on which team Arkansas shows up. It does help State's chances at that game is here in Starkville, but I don't see State putting up much of a chance against A&M, Alabama, and you know, I don't see Mississippi State winning the 8-Bowl in Oxford this year either. Because like I said, State's weakness plays right into Ole Miss's strength, which is throwing the football.
Well, obviously the Egg Bowl is on a lot of people's minds right now. It is throughout the year, but especially as we get into November and we see what these teams have become, and it looks like an old fashioned Egg Bowl. I mean, Ole Miss might get there with the chance to play for bowl eligibility. The Rebels need to win three, and you look on the schedule and you see that MSU secondary, and you think the Rebels will match up well there and that the game will be in Oxford. Ole Miss has Georgia Southern, a Sun Belt Conference opponent, this week. They should be able to score enough points to win. I think they're going to give up a lot of rushing yards. I think you're going to see that. Georgia Southern has an elite running game. They've got a quarterback and a running back who both have run for more than 3,000 yards in their careers. And the option is what they do. And we saw Ole Miss struggle with the option game of an FCS opponent earlier this year in Wofford. You'll have a few more athletes and a little higher skill level coming from a Georgia Southern team that is 4-4 overall and 3-2 in the Sun Belt Conference. And this is a Georgia Southern program, Logan, that wins, man. They have that history about them. And they were like the North Dakota State of 1AA before you heard of North Dakota State. Georgia Southern won 6 national championships at that level. This is their second year of Sun Belt Conference competition, so they are one of those low-level FBS teams. And they run. They just always have. So that's not a good matchup for Ole Miss. I do think the Rebels will be proficient in the passing game. They've lost 3 straight. They were very good in the passing game against Auburn, a talented defense there that you saw live that Auburn has. Ole Miss passed for a single game record 465 yards from Chad Kelly. 3 touchdown passes. Auburn had only given up 7 touchdowns on the year, and Kelly threw for 3. He also had an interception late in the game when the Rebels were trying to drive and retake the lead there in about the middle of the fourth quarter. And it really turned fast for Ole Miss in that game, Logan. You had Evan Ingram, who I think he'll be your all-SEC tight end, and he'll make some All-America teams. He had 9 catches for 95 yards, narrowly missed his 4th 100-yard receiving game of the year. But everyone will remember that drop. It was a little bit low. It didn't hit him at his chest, but he got his hands on it, and you've seen Evan Ingram make so many outstanding catches. It was clearly a drop, and it was a touchdown that would have given Ole Miss the lead in the middle of the fourth quarter. Doesn't mean they'd have won the game because they weren't stopping Auburn's run game. There was still a lot of football to play, but you'd much rather have the lead than not have it. Ingram drops the pass. On the next play, Kelly is picked off. The ball's returned to the Ole Miss 25. Three plays later, Auburn scores, and just like that, it's a two-possession game, and there's like 5 or 6 minutes left to play, and that was kind of all she wrote at that point. I think Ole Miss will score against Georgia Southern, but there is the issue of the offensive line right now. A lot of guys moving in and out, a lot of guys hurt, held out, and whatnot. Just about all of the, almost all of the starters have some sort of injury issue, whether it's the knee of Robert Conyers or the ankle of Jordan Sims, Sean Rawlings, and Rod Taylor. Everybody's got some issue on the offensive line there. So you'll see some different personnel groupings that you haven't seen this year. You'll see guys moving in and out. Some guys who haven't played just a ton this year are being called on a lot more, like Durante Bolden, a career reserve. And he's being used a lot more than he ever has. They were able to mix and match along the offensive line and move the ball and score against a very good Auburn defense. So I think they will against Georgia Southern as well. But again, people are looking at this Egg Bowl and looking ahead to that matchup. For Ole Miss to really be playing for bowl eligibility there, they're going to have to win at Vanderbilt. And that's not going to be an easy task, and that'll be right before the Egg Bowl. Ole Miss will make that trip up to Nashville on November 19th. I'm not giving Ole Miss much of a chance to go out to Texas A&M and win. Maybe they get in a shootout there, and maybe they are proficient in the passing game and score a lot of points. You know, I've seen enough of that from this offense, Logan, to never write that out, to never say that couldn't happen, because this team was really good on offense for stretches of time against Florida State, Alabama, and for 60 minutes they just completely dominated Georgia. I saw what they did against Memphis. Yeah, I see how good this passing game can be, so I won't completely write them out against Texas A&M on the road, but I am not expecting Ole Miss to go there and win. So basically you got, you know, three games and the Rebels need to sweep, win all three of those games to become eligible for a bowl game. And if they do, in fact, win against Georgia Southern and lose at Texas A&M, let's assume that they beat Vanderbilt, then that Mississippi State game is going to be for bowl eligibility. The question is, at that point, you know, how hard are these teams going to play? The fact that it's the rivalry game, will that be enough for them to really get up and compete? Yeah, probably so at the beginning, a little while. But the potential for State to come in there with even a lesser frame of mind than they have right now, you know, that, you know, when you brought up the schedule, you know what November looks like. I mean, they could reach that game really down on themselves emotionally. And frankly, Ole Miss could too. If, let's say, they win against Georgia Southern, if they stub their toe against Vanderbilt, they don't win that game, they don't play well, they lose, you know, who knows? These have been disappointing seasons for the two local teams, and it's shaping up to be kind of an old-fashioned Egg Bowl.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I wanted to ask you about, Parrish, was, you know, obviously Ole Miss had a lot higher expectations than Mississippi State going into this year. I mean, there were even some people talking about, you know, Ole Miss could be an outside playoff type of team this year with the talent that they had coming back, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You know, what's kind of the mood, you know, since they, you know, they're sitting here 3-5 right now, you know, what is the mood of this team? I mean, obviously, some of the goals that they had set for themselves, they're not going to be able to attain those this year, but is playing for a bowl game enough for this team? I mean, can you kind of gauge that mood with the team right now?
Well, they talk about winning out, and they believe they're capable, and, you know, they don't count themselves out of Texas A&M, even if I do, mostly. You know,
I'm right there with you. I think the Egg Bowl is going to be a chance for Ole Miss to play themselves into a bowl game. I mean, obviously it's not going to be a great bowl, but, you know, any bowl at this point, it's still extra practice time.
Yeah, I think that's how it's shaping up, and I think there's a good chance for Ole Miss to arrive in that game with five wins. But, you know, winning against Vanderbilt and Nashville, not going to be easy. They've got a star running back in Ralph Webb. They're pretty good defensively, you know, so we'll just see. Vanderbilt traditionally has played Ole Miss strong and has given the Rebels a lot of trouble. And frankly, it was more than just playing Ole Miss strong when James Franklin was there. Vanderbilt was winning that series. You know, Vanderbilt's changed since Franklin is gone, but they're a better team this year. They're trying to play themselves into a bowl as well. So, you know, that's just kind of where we stand with football. I know we'll be shifting gears to basketball here soon. I'll be covering Ole Miss in its exhibition against Morehouse College later this evening. I know you've got an exhibition coming up as well. Who will they play? Who will the Bulldogs play?
Well, Mississippi State's women are ranked 10th in the country. They open up with Arkansas Fort Smith tonight. It's actually a game where one of Schaefer's assistants from last year, Elena Lovato, is the head coach of that team now. And also a girl from our coverage area, Jasmine Spears, who played for Mississippi State a year ago from New Albany. She's actually transferred to Arkansas Fort Smith. So they reunite tonight. And then the men get in action in exhibition play tomorrow night, on Friday night. They play at Delta State, so an in-state matchup type of game for that. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Ben Hallen with all those freshmen on the floor, just kind of how they do for the first time.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out our news podcast, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And for all your high school sports needs, check out Prep Rally with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. Brad Locke will jump in there with them as well. That comes to you every Wednesday. And Logan and I will be here with you again next week for another edition of Double Coverage.